What's up? It's your boys Jordan and Abraham. As always, he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend, and I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. But most importantly, we are your friends who read One Piece. Now, if you're listening on Spotify, please take a moment to rate us 5 stars and feel free to reach out to us on our YouTube page, Friends Who Read One Piece, which coincidentally is also where we have a poll for our latest crew draft where, my crew bodied Jordan's crew. And please show up,
Allegedly,
vote,
allegedly,
vote.
allegedly. If there's one thing your crew did not do to my crew, it's body them. I want to be really clear about this. You can say a lot of things about whether or not we could sail the ocean or know how to or gonna be functional and have synergy. If there's one thing your crew is not doing, it's bodying my crew. I want to be very clear about that.
We just gotta wait for you guys to get sick, get sick and weak. And also engage with us on Twitter at FWROP Pod. We look forward to hearing from all of you. But now I kind of want to get into chapter 1120. This, Jordan, I thought was a chapter that at the beginning, I don't know, we had a lot of. We had a lot more just general talking. I didn't feel like there was too much that we got from this chapter seemed to set up stuff in future chapters, right? Like with the stuff we got from Clover, with the stuff we got from the giant robot at the end. But I didn't feel reading this chapter that there was all that much in it for me right now. How did you feel going through this chapter? And we can go through it like we always do, bit by bit, but yeah, what did you think?
I definitely enjoyed the chapter. I feel like a lot of people on the internet are hating because they're really expecting everything to come in one chapter. And I just want to give people,
Quick,
give
quick,
people
quick question though. Are the people on the internet your friends in your group chat?
an Some of them are my friends. Some of them are my friends. Some of them are the people who were commenting on the spoiler thread on Reddit as it was coming
Okay.
out. But I think that if you are disappointed by this, I think that there's going to be a lot more of this kind of stuff as we continue getting lore drops later in the series. So I think just like buckle up for a lot of periods of explanation. Obviously, we didn't get all the way to everything, but I think we're continuing to be able to get a little bit more in terms of nuggets that allow us to build theories. And I think that that is going to be one of the pieces that's interesting, is we're still going to have a little bit more to talk to and be able to make slightly,
Yeah.
hopefully, more accurate predictions as to what's happening.
I think part of it is just a weekly reading experience as opposed to being able to read
Exactly.
it all, as it was intended in, one whole arc once completed. I do kind of get it though, because we've been getting this for like the last 3, 4 months. So I understand why people are kind of fed up. But why don't you take me through what happened this chapter? Let's break it down and let's get into it.
Let's do it, man. So this chapter starts 26 years ago on Punk Hazard with the conversation that inspired Vegapunk to continue researching the Void Center. Clover asks Vegapunk for help with his research, and a young Vegapunk, recently a military man, declines to support his research. Clover reveals his real name in this conversation. Clive, I think, spelled super Irishly, basically Claiomh, D, Clover, and that his brother was killed by mysterious figures for the D in his brother's name. 4 years later, hearing the news of Clover's death, Vegapunk resolves to continue his research into the Void Century. Abraham, Clover is a D, and his brother was murdered for it?
Well, I assume that his brother was also a D, right? Like, so his
So
brother
that's
was
what I meant.
also,
That's what I mean. His brother was murdered for his D. Yes, correct.
For his D, that's crazy. Whoa.
Bro,
Your
his D
brother was
must have
murdered for
been
his
crazy,
D?
bro.
That's crazy.
I wish someone wanted to murder me for my D, bro. What's he doing with that D?
Yeah, I don't know. He must be devious. The D stands for devious or something. I don't know. That's crazy.
That D must have been doing something that could not be allowed if people were going that crazy over the D. I had some people go crazy over the D before, but never like that. Never wanted to kill him for the D.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty clearly stated that he was murdered for his name, right? That's why Clover says, like, what kind of a world do we live in where, you know, you could it's a crime just to have a certain name, whatever. You can be murdered for just having a certain name, right? And I don't know if there's a general like genocide, a D-clan genocide that I could say is actually happening, because we know the world government partners with some of, like, Garp is a known D, right? That is a Marine, right? We know that Saul, right? He introduced himself as Jaguar D. Saul, right? So I don't know. Maybe you could say that the world government is fine working with these people if they, like, you know, submit. But I also feel like that's not really how genocides work, right? Like the Lunarians are all gone pretty much, right? Except for King. That was a genocide. So I don't really think that there's a necessarily a genocide. Maybe the two of them were doing something and they're like, oh, you're a D, bang, and like wiped him out, because I don't know.
Well, this is what is so interesting to me about that panel. You see Clover saying he lied to save himself, saying we were only friends. Basically, that implies that had Clover told them that he was actually his brother, that he actually shared the same D. that his brother had. If he revealed that they shared the same D, that he was going to be murdered. Who are these shadowy figures who are running around the world murdering people for this letter in their name? Are
Maybe it's
those the
CP0.
Marines? Are those CP0? Are those God's Knights, maybe even? There's any variety of characters it could be, but this certainly seems like there's, at the very least, some amount of intentionality to killing the D's, and it definitely doesn't seem like it's just random people who are bullying them. These people, at the from the outline, I get the sense they're kind of organized, they're kind of dressed
They look
similarly
like
to each
CP
other.
agents to me, right? You remember, like, this, how the CP 5 or 9 agents that went to O'Hara looked like? They kind of look like that. If you look at, like, the trench coats, the hats, all that stuff.
That
But
does make sense, but I also feel like for anything that would have reached Clover and his brother, who at this point in the story are seem to be just like random archaeologists, certainly like this seems like it could have been the they seem like random archaeologists at this point, right? They're not being killed for the research. They're being killed for who they actually are. It doesn't seem like that's a job for CP0 to actually be all the way out there.
I don't know. I mean, if I had to guess as to who it was, I would have guessed either CP9 or CP0. We know that that's like the assassination branch of the world government. I feel like Clover is as important as he's probably going to be to the story. I don't think he's important enough to involve the God's Knights or like the Gorosei. I don't think the Marines. I don't think this is a function that the Marines would normally perform. I this seems like classic CP9 kind of stuff, like what we learned about in Enies Lobby.
I think it just makes me wonder about the possibility of like what happened immediately before the story of One Piece began. We talk about how Gold D. Roger, you know, no one in the world knew of the D in his name. It was only basically Dr. Kureha who actually remembered that. And his assassination, or you know, his execution must have been some number of years ago, but it certainly seems to me that there has been some intentionality around killing D's. And I think that when we've seen things like the God's Knights running around just having extermination campaigns where they just go out and like kill people on random islands for fun, it sort of feels to me like that could actually be one of the potential reasons for existing for them, that they can actually be taking on some of these really horrible tasks that are kind of on a larger scale, but maybe even beyond just CP0, who's still kind of under the military world government, that kind of thing.
Maybe. I kind of expected the Gods Knights to be like the standing army of Mirjoas, right? To protect the Celestial Dragons and their home in case they get attacked like they did at the Reverie. I'm not saying it couldn't be them. It could be that, but yeah, it's just that this feels like this is assassination. This is a covert action. This is exactly what we've seen CP9 do in the past. Could be CP0 as well. Like one of those two. It feels like that for me. But what I took from this is that the decline is really just, it is way more common than we originally all, at least than I originally thought, right?
Mm.
Like, there's just all of these Ds that are popping up out of the woodwork. And none of them, so obviously within, like, Clover and his brother were both Ds, right? Within a single family, or like Luffy, Garp, Dragon, they're all D clan members, right? Within a single family.
Like, right.
That initial, I guess, or whatever is inherited, right? But then you look and you're like, all of these different races and people that are completely unrelated from one another all have that D initial in their name. And I think Clover is just like the latest one to get added. To me, it's like, well, we've talked about how, you know, is the will of D something like that is like passed down through like your family, like more like genetic versus something that I think like more abstract, like some kind of inherited will kind of thing. And I don't know, for me, Dr. Clover now also being a D makes me lean more towards that inherited will kind of thing, especially his story with Vegapunk, where he's like, I feel like Vegapunk, he's not a D, but he has now inherited Clover's will to a degree. You know what I mean? Like, he's hesitant to take any action until what happens at Ohara, and now he's kind of taken up the mantle from him. I don't know. What did you think about Clover actually just even being revealed as a D?
I agree that I think it's interesting, the idea that Clover, that there are all these people who, it doesn't necessarily mean you're a strong fighter. It doesn't necessarily mean you're just one of these people who has superhuman, this, and that. Because I think that's one of the impressions it was really easy to get is, oh, it's right. People who have this relation, and it's physical, it's passed down in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really has me thinking about inherited will, but in this, I think we need to begin thinking about everything is within the context of this ancient war that's been going on for 800 years, and exactly how the, presumably the Joy Boy faction, or the pirate, the group of people who were part of the, who were allied with Joy Boy against the group of people who eventually became the world government, were able to like pass this sort of will on. And so I'm completely with you that it's some kind of inherited will. To me, the next question becomes, if it's inherited will, what exactly is it that's passed down between these people? Whether it's some, even it just like could just be some kind of curiosity, some kind of desire for freedom. I mean, desire is a D word. It seems unlikely that it would be that, but desire is a D word too. You know what I'm saying? Like, but to have this kind of inherited will passed down that, you know, what exactly is it that could be instilled in all these people that says, I can't accept things the way they are, that the ancient, you know, group of people who was affiliated with Joy Boy knew was going to help them resist the world government 800 years later.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm on board with all of that. I think there is some kind of philosophy that all of these D members share, and we don't really know what that philosophy is, because it's not like Blackbeard and Luffy are similar to one another in a lot of ways, but they're also different from one another in a lot of ways. And maybe Oda will clarify it, or maybe he will just tell his story and let other people analyze it and interpret it however they see fit. He might not ever explicitly state what the will of D is, but I'm glad we're on board in that we both think this is more some kind of abstract concept rather than something that's genetically inherited. What else? What else do you want to talk about that happened this chapter?
A man's dream never dies.
Yeah, exactly.
Jumping back to the present, though, Vegapunk continues his message. As the Straw Hats, Lilith, and Atlas prepare for takeoff from the Labosphere while Venus Juro closes in on them. Realizing they aren't going to make it out in time, Atlas suddenly smashes Lilith to the ground and snaps her neck or something like that. Her head is still on her, but it's, you know, she like snaps her neck to cut off her access to Punk Records before telling the crew to take off and sacrificing herself to prepare for a kamikaze blow on Saint Venus. So, Abraham, is Lilith actually the next Straw Hat?
So, I don't think that Lilith will be a Straw Hat in this, like, a permanent Straw Hat member. I think she'll be on the ship until maybe the next, like, maybe until we get to Elbaf or something like that. For a couple reasons. Well, one, we didn't get much exposition about her character this whole... She was the first Vegapunk that we were introduced to, obviously, right?
Right.
But you think about how Brooke was written, how Frank, all of these, how basically go through every single Straw Hat in the arc that they were introduced, and you're like, yeah, Oda took the time out to flesh out this character and so on and so forth. And you could say Oda did that for the Stella body, but I don't think that he did that for any of the satellites, right? So Lilith does not seem like someone who would join the crew for me. I also do think that there might be some encroachment on Frankie's role on the crew in terms of weapons developer and all that other stuff if Lilith were to stay on. So I don't really expect Lilith to last longer than maybe one more island, maybe, you know?
I do think you make a pretty good point. Oftentimes when you see a character in who's going to, you know, we've had a lot of different kind of backgrounds, a lot more fleshing out of just who their friends are, things like that, as we get different characters who are going to join the crew. What I will say is that oftentimes when the character who's going to join the crew appears, you kind of know that that's the one who's going to join the crew. For example,
people say that. But
there's all these cooks, and then suddenly one of them shows up and is holding full body by the throat.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing a black suit and he's cool. That's the guy who's going to join the crew. We go to Water 7 and there's all these guys. Is Lucci going to join the crew? Is it going to be Polly? Who's it going to be? And then you see a guy running around in a Speedo and a Hawaiian shirt with blue hair. You say, that's going to be the guy who's going to join the crew, right? Dr. Kareha, you see, oh, this old doctor, we're in a town of doctors, we're going to get a doctor. Oh, there's a reindeer. And in that same way, I sort of feel like if Lilith is the one to join the crew, we at the very least had the fact that just about everyone was predicting if there was one of these people who was going to make it out alive, it was going to be Lilith. Is that just because she's a baddie? Yeah. Entirely. But it does seem that she's poised to sail along with the crew for a little while. And I'll say that I do like that they were able to take away the connection to Punk Records.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is one of the big things that felt like it was going to be a major plot hole or a major issue if she continued sailing with the crew was, oh, you have access to all of Vegapunk's records. Well, that's just kind of ridiculous. And just tell everyone the ancient history, please.
Exactly.
And now there's an ability for her to actually go sail with the crew and not necessarily have that.
Yeah, I agree. I think her getting disconnected from Punk Records definitely makes it a possibility. I still don't see it happening, but it opens up the door that it could.
Exactly. So the Sunny blasts off with Chopper and Usopp hanging on to Jinbei for dear life, and the Marines noticing the Elder Stars in their monster form, shocked, as Luffy and the Albafians react in amazement to the Iron Giant, Emmett. Suddenly, Emmett speaks to him. Joy Boy, I'm happy we got to meet again. Over here, you. I came like before. Your enemy is my enemy. I am glad I can fight for you again, Joy Boy. I will protect you from danger again, Joy Boy. Abraham, is this the voice of all things?
I think it is, but we don't really know what the voice of all things is, who can hear the voice of all things, why they can and whatnot, right? But this is exactly like what we saw with Zunisha, right? In that case, Momo was also able to hear the voice, and for some reason he was able to actually communicate with Zunisha when Luffy couldn't. And this time, Luffy, I mean, I do think he's able to actually communicate back and forth with the giant robot, right? So I guess for whatever reason, maybe it's because Luffy has awakened his fruit now. Maybe if he was the same as he had been on Zoe, you know what I mean? This the robot wouldn't necessarily be talking to him because he wouldn't recognize him as Joy Boy. You know what I mean?
I mean, did we see Luffy actually, did we see him react to anything Luffy said? I don't know if we did.
Yeah, well, so I don't know if Luffy necessarily said anything to him, but he was trying to. So Zunisha was definitely talking, I guess, towards Momo is my point, right?
Yeah.
Luffy could hear what Zunisha was saying, but she was talking towards Momo. Whereas the Iron Giant is explicitly trying to, you know, have this quote unquote conversation with Luffy. And I guess my point is that if Luffy were to return to Zoe now in his Gear 5th form, maybe he could also do that. Because he is officially Joy Boy. But yeah, I mean the similarities between this and Zunisha are like really, really obvious to I think pretty much everyone, right? So I don't know what this could be other than the voice of all things.
I'll say that it continues to make me, I agree, I think it's the voice of all things. It continues to make me interested as to what the voice of all things is. Certainly, it seems that there's some kind of connection between all of these random allies of Joy Boy who are kind of just floating around. Man, you're drinking that water so fancy, man. This man drink like pinky up, man. This man drink like he's in SpongeBob season one, putting his pinky up. it makes me wonder the what we've seen from the voice of all things is, I guess, like one with ancient weapons. We see Shirahoshi has the ability to communicate with sea kings.
Yeah,
we have Joy Boy. Luffy in his Joy Boy form, communicating with Emmett. You have Zunisha communicating with Momonosuke and actually, you know, being like Joy Boy has returned. I wonder if there's more, one, if there's more relics of this ancient time who have been wandering for 900 years who are ready to start fighting and what the heck they actually might be. I mean, is the red line going to come apart and it turns out there's actually a rumbling of like Luffy allies? Probably not, but I do feel like there have to be more than just these two, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, just to add to the list of things that your list of voice of all things, the Roger Pirates weren't able to read the Poneglyphs, but they could interpret the voice of all things, right? So Rayleigh said himself, right, that is why they were able to kind of sort of interpret the Poneglyphs, right? Maybe I'm misremembering, but I'm pretty sure that's what he told the Straw Hats on like Sabaody, right? So
I'm not sure.
Maybe Alex, if you could look that up for us, I don't know if you'll be able to find it, but I'm pretty sure he talks about how they were not scholars like Clover and whatnot, and that they were able to basically navigate their way through because they could interpret the voice of all things.
Well, I'll say that even though we have Vegapunk fatigue and haven't gotten that much into what he said, definitely hearing the purest form of the voice of all things is what we're expecting people to be able to hear. At the very last island, when we get to Laugh Tale, it's some very pure version of it that's not, I guess, watered down, distorted, anything like that. Certainly there's some kind of great communication network that people can actually access. Yeah. I just wonder if that has to do with, I'm not sure that that's something that will help us necessarily understand the connection between all the Joy Boy allies.
The voice?
The way the Roger Pirates were able to reach there using it, I don't know if that's going to help us understand, oh, there's Luffy and Emmett, there's Luffy and Zunisha.
Yeah.
And like, who else was there just 800 years ago? Like the Sea Kings, right?
There
have got to be other things that can be joining in this fight. There can't just be like one giant robot somewhere and there was never another giant robot. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, There might not have been other giant robots. I don't know. This guy seems like a really artificial creation, right?
Yeah, it might be one giant robot, but like, you know, there's a giant robot just sits sleeping somewhere in the world, and Zunisha's like wandering for 800 years, and like they're
you
definitely not the only ones that ever existed, and they might not be the only ones who are still sleeping, laying in wait right
Got
now.
you. You're saying there's more Joy Boy allies that we're going to see down the line in the story.
Exactly.
Okay.
So as we continue, the Giants note that they couldn't hear the robot as the Elder Stars and Marines prepare to help the Straw Hats escape. Emmett squares up against Jupiter while Saturn jumps aboard the Elbaf ship in full ugly old spider form. As the Sunny careens toward the ocean, Atlas self-destructs, taking half of Venus Juro's head with her. As York celebrates being the only Vegapunk left connected to the network, we see Venus Juro recovering from the attack, with half his head blown off and coming back. Have we seen regenerative powers like this before?
The only thing that comes to mind is back on Thriller Bark, where the whole idea is, you know, your body will take the shape of whatever. You remember how at the end of the arc, the Straw Hats are burning up, and then they get their shadows back and their bodies recover because the body has to take the form of the shadow and whatnot. Other than that, it's like, bro, this guy had half of his head blown off, and yeah, and it's just coming back like a homunculus. And it was one thing for me to see Saturn take all of the hits that he took from Luffy before the rest of the Gorosei showed up, and then just get up. Like, he seemed just like, okay, he's a tank. He can soak up a lot of damage. But then you, like, legitimately have something that should kill any, I don't even want to just say human, any, like, living being, right? Like, nothing should be able to survive half of their head getting blown up. And this guy just regenerates it and is good to go. So, no, I don't think we've really seen anything like this before. And I mean, I don't think either of us ever thought that they had devil fruit powers or that these Gorosei were humans. But to me, this just reinforces the fact that these guys are some kind of devils or demons or some like non-humanoid creature, right?
I agree with that. Can't say I feel like I was surprised by his head coming back. Like, I almost read over it and was just like, I don't know. You know, we had seen Saturn take whatever the Shohei Ohtani award was when he hits the. I mean, listen, he got like hit by his own little poison bombs that turn you into like melt that were out here melting things and making an explosion, and he even tanked that. So I can't say I was surprised by it, but I do think it's nice continuing to have an elaboration on the fact that, yes, these dudes are demons. Yes, these dudes are something beyond human. What I can definitely say is we have not seen a devil fruit power that can do that. Whether or not you believe that their power is, whether or not you think that this is like an interesting part of the power, I think it just continues to give us some amount of confirmation that their powers don't just come from devil fruits. Certainly the ability to live 800 years doesn't come from a devil fruit. It'll be really interesting to see what comes of that.
Yeah, for sure. These guys are built differently.
So as we come to the final few frames of the chapter, we get this epic frame of Emmett, one arm blown off and burning up from its clash with Jupiter, standing up to Jupiter and Mercury. Oh my, I've really rusted away. This is the time you spoke of, right, Joy Boy? Can I use it? Emmett says as we hit the end page for this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, my prediction is going to be related to what it
is. Let's do predictions, because mine's going to be related too. Let's do predictions. Let's go into, we're just going to
go into do, prediction. Where, okay. I want you to go first, because I think mine, mine is a joke prediction, but it also could be really real, and I think you're going to love it, but I want you to go first.
Dang, man, I had a serious prediction. You started teasing predictions. I got all excited. Well, I think that what's going to happen that I think will continue to make this arc interesting is we're going to get some kind of nuke right? We've seen Mother Flame. It has Adam on there. There's been all kinds of like nuclear imagery. I think the idea that maybe even nuclear power is the theme that kind of has given us a lot of this, you know, futuristic society of that's actually of the past, but whatever. I think nuclear energy is one of the themes that feels like it's inspiring that. And it feels like it would be missing something if there was never any kind of bomb. And I think that what is going to happen is we're going to see the death of maybe one, maybe two, but I think we're actually going to see one of the elder stars die. And I think that it's going to actually create some kind of crazy reaction beyond just, oh, now he's dead.
That's crazy. I don't, that would be wild if one of them actually died. I don't think one of them is going to die. That would be crazy.
It's crazy too. That was your original what you thought the Egghead incident was going to be, and now you're like, man, they're not going
to
die.
No, but yeah, but not to.
I mean, you have more information now.
Yeah, you know, but also, I feel like it would be different for Luffy to kill Agorase than it would be for I don't want to call the robot an NPC, but he kind of is right? So like to have that significant of a character die from someone who probably hasn't had any role in the story. I don't know. It would be crazy. It's a bold prediction. I love it, but like that would be absolutely wild.
What I'll say is I don't think that we're just going to see, like I've said, for a lot of time, I don't think we're just going to see the Straw Hats just like line up to 1v1 the Elder Stars and that's how the series ends. I think obviously we have some like ridiculous powers with Luffy. I mean, I've brought up the idea of maybe you end up with a bunch of different like Nika type figures. You end up with like Luffy, Bonnie, Lucci, you know, whoever else, right? Having some kind of ridiculous awakening where they all start laughing and giggling and end up fighting against the Elder Stars. I think that's still an interesting possibility that would be fun storytelling wise. But yeah. I also, there's a part of me that starts to wonder if one of these guys actually dies, what happens? Does that have some kind of implication beyond just they die and there's one fewer Elder Star? Does something in the world get set out of balance? Are each of these guys holding together some kind of figment of some kind of like fabric of the world that results in, you know, that results in this kind of composition of the world that we see every day, right? Like, are they all using, do you need all of them to be constantly doing something to keep the sea levels higher or like to maintain the red line or whatever? And so I think that seeing that would be really cool and really interesting. And I do think it would be disappointing if it's just another escape arc. I mean, that seems to be, but it would be really cool if we actually like for the introduction of Emmett to just be, it sacrifices itself, and now one of the Elder Stars recovers, and then nothing happens. That doesn't seem that interesting to me. So I want a little more, and I'm going to predict it.
Okay, that's cool. All right. So I'm going to build up to this prediction. When the first attack...
Oh, build up.
Emmett tries to do. He like throws like his left hand out there, right?
Right.
To me, that looked like weapons left. Frankie's weapons left. Ooh, you look at that panel, I was like, oh, that, you know.
Look a little bit like weapons left.
Right? And then also, obviously, Emmett is a giant-ass robot. Frankie's obviously, you know, the mech on the crew. And I started looking more closely into the chapter, and I was like, oh, we have a coup de burst, right, that the ship uses to, like, blast off, obviously. That's another one of Frankie's attacks that he uses, right?
Yeah,
we have a centaur form in this series, right? We have a freaking Venus Juro who is explicitly called a centaur in this chapter, right?
That's another form
that Frankie has in terms of his transformations, right? So I was just like racking my brain. I'm like, man, what is Frankie's most powerful move? And I was like, it's not the coup de burst. I thought it might be Frankie Centauros because that was unbeatable. But if you remember Thriller Bark, a And there's a reason I brought up Thriller Bark minutes
ago. Yeah. I've been thinking about that a little bit too. Yeah, go on.
There's a lot of demons, a lot of demonic activity, you know, a lot of Thriller Bark-ish kind of stuff happening. The one ability that we didn't get to see Frankie use was probably his most powerful ability, which was the docking.
Yeah, his most powerful one.
Docking. Because Robin refused to do the docking. My prediction is that that the giant robot is going to use is going to be some kind of docking, and that's the attack that he is going to unleash on the Morrissey.
So the left arm that's blown off is where Robin was supposed to be.
Exactly. We're going to get the docking that we should have gotten 500 chapters ago.
I'm like, love this prediction. Honestly, I've been kind of wondering. I'm like, now that there is a giant robot, all that giant robot talk really seemed like a little bit of foreshadowing. It really did, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued. It's, you know, I feel like that's going to come back at some point. And maybe Robin's going to have to jump on. I don't know. Maybe Emmett's going to say, no, you have to do this. You have to do this to be a part of it.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if it happens. It probably won't. But how amazing would that be if we finally got the docking?
It would be incredible. It would be beautiful. Robin would have to swallow her pride, and I would endorse that. I think it would be what you might say is an award-worthy moment.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a beautiful transition to our next piece.
Awards.
We're going to jump into that awards show, give the awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, what is your award this week?
Yeah, my award is going to go to, honestly, it's going to go to all of the giant pirates, you know, that are just, you know, happy. They're celebrating, jumping up and down with Luffy. They're kind of ignorant. You ever have those friends that are just, it's almost kind of like a dog where they're just like, they don't know why they're happy or why you're happy. They're just happy to be happy because you're happy. Yeah. Right. That's basically the giants in this chapter.
I love
that they're just vibing with Luffy. It made me want to be a part of it, because it's like, man, I just want to be, you know, drinking with you guys, vibing. So I'm going to give it's a vibe award to all of the giant pirates.
That's a beautiful award, and wouldn't it be great to be vibing with them ourselves? Yeah. My award is the Cú Chulainn Award, because that's like the Irish guy who I see in all these different random things. He's Lancer in Fate, Stay Night Unlimited Blade Works. He was in something. He was in, like, was it a video game I was playing? Yeah, he was in one of the Personas as a hero. And every time I text my buddy in Ireland, I say, like, you know, who the heck is, like, is it, you know, is this, oh, look, is this a real guy? And he's like, that's a good old, you know, that's like a hero, you know, like from our, he's like our, he did like whatever, you know. And obviously I'm giving that to Clover for like whatever the mess his name is. As a part of this, you know, I want to play a quick game with you, Abraham, because, you know, I have a lot of Irish friends just because my coach is Irish, you know, my buddy Hugh's Irish. I'm gonna give you two names, and I'm gonna ask how you think they're pronounced.
Okay.
The first one's a little more common, so you might have heard of it before. N A I M H.
N A I M H.
Hmm.
Name.
Neve.
Neve.
Yeah.
Where's the V? Where's the V?
M H, bro. M H. M H is V. Irish or whatever. So, like, I'm looking at this name, like, I text him, he didn't get back to me. I was like, how do you say this C-L-O-I-M-H or whatever? I was like, Clive? I don't know. But M-H, it sounds like a V. And his coach's name is F-E-I-D-H-L-I-M.
F-E-I-D-H-L-I-M.
F-L-I-M. Yeah.
Fleevum?
Phelim.
Fable?
Phelim.
Yeah. I added a V randomly because I was like,
right.
I guess these.
Right.
I also know there was a girl in my class named Siobhan that was spelled like S I O B H A N.
So yeah, exactly, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
The Irish just like adding V's where they don't exist. So I just, there was no V in his name. I just decided to put one in there.
Yeah, it's honestly a worthwhile guess, I would say.
Is this guy a good coach if he's always failing him?
he is actually a pretty good coach, but Hugh had a whole story where the British coach would come over and be like, are you coached by that Fadilum Kelly? And of course all the Irish guys were like, oh, he said Fadilum Kelly. ridiculous, the Irish with the names. But no, despite being named Phelan, he's not Phelan. Alex, you wanna kick us off on our next segment?
Yeah, sure thing. We're hot on the heels of our Laughtail Crew draft, and we've got another one for you. It's going to be a men's harem draft. So Jordan and Abraham are both going to try and draft 5 One Piece men to appeal to our 2 judges. I know Katie's going to be one of them. I think the other one, maybe Becky, we'll find somebody. The rules are going to be very similar to the previous draft, which, by the way, our poll is still open on YouTube and Twitter. So go give that a quick look and give us some feedback. We'd love to hear it. But we're going to do another snake draft, starting with Jordan this time. Each pick must consist, again, of a pirate and a cannon crew that they were a part of. And once a crew has been named, it is off limits for the rest of the draft. Jordan, I think you were flying by the seat of your pants last time. You have any prep this time? What are you thinking for this harem draft?
Let me be clear. I'm still very happy with the crew that I came up with. We're still going to whoop Abraham. If they run up on us, it's not even going to be an issue. We'll run up on them. We'll kidnap Robin. We'll run up on Big Mom, kidnap Pudding. It's not even going to be an issue.
Won't happen.
With the crew that I have. But I cannot wait for this harem drafts. I think there's only one right answer for the first pick in the men's harem draft.
Yeah.
I think we all know exactly who's coming. The man with the 3 swords, the conqueror's hockey, the looks beautiful with his shirt off. I was on a group message today with our Black Nerds in Providence group, and one guy was talking about how he finds Zoro very attractive, and he was like, that mouth holds a sword. What that mouth do? There's even more things that you can imagine.
No.
The number one pick in the men's harem One Piece draft, Roronoa Zoro.
That's crazy. I would not have taken... I don't think I would have taken Zoro over Sanji, man.
Bro, what?
I don't think I would have. I don't think
crazy.
I would have.
That is the craziest thing ever.
That's kind of wild. I have a funny story for you guys before I make my next pick. I tried to call in my own expert to consult with me before the draft, which was my girlfriend, Julia. Mm. She doesn't really watch any anime or read manga. So I was just like, look, I'm going to show you a bunch of pictures of a bunch of these men in One Piece. You tell me which ones you think are cute and which ones aren't. Oh, I showed her so many pictures. I went like Mihawk, Ben Beckman, Shanks, Rayleigh, all these people. I showed her like over a dozen pictures and she shut down every single one. She's just like, no, no, no. She got the Shanks and she was like, no, I don't like his goatee thing that he has, this thin little pencil beard that he has. And she said, wait. That beard looks like my beard.
Like, babe, what are you talking about?
She's like, no. His is like way, way, way thinner than yours. It looks like a prepubescent boy. I was like, I don't know. That looks awfully similar to what I got. I was like, do I need to shave?
That's so funny. I'm looking at it and it really looks awful similar to what you have. It looks awful similar.
So I called her in for a consultation and she basically told me, she was like, show me the attractive men. I said, I showed you all the beautiful men. Right. I ripped out the ugly ones. Like, what? So she wasn't really any help. She basically called she nitpicked all the flaws of all the guys that I showed her. I'll give you. I'll honestly tell you what I was choosing between for my number one pick. It was going to be between Ben Beckman and Shanks. Both are handsome men. I think both are extremely handsome men.
Those
And
are both guys
you know,
on my list, I would say. Continue.
yeah. I kind of want to go Shanks, but I feel like Shanks is overplayed. You know what I mean? We had him in the last draft. We didn't have Ben Beckman, and I think Ben Beckman also has. He's got a nice niche of people that are probably into Ben Beckman. So I'm gonna go with Ben Beckman instead of Shanks as my first
Wow,
pick.
interesting.
Even though I think that's the non-traditional pick.
Ben Beckman is a surprise pick, but he is a handsome man, so I can't necessarily hate on that.
And then for my second pick, Jordan, you like older women, right? So maybe some of our judges like older men. I'm actually gonna go with the Silver Fox, Silver's Railing as my
Oh
second
man,
pick.
he was gonna be one of the ones I was gonna take soon. I'm not gonna lie to
Yeah, no, I'll take Silver's Railing with my second pick.
Man, Rayleigh is a sexy dude. I'm not even
He
gonna lie.
is.
Like he's kind of got that, he's got the long hair. He's
Yeah.
clearly very strong.
Yeah.
He's reliable, a good dude. Like, I'm out here making your arguments for you.
Yeah.
Rayleigh,
He's
that's a very
a handsome
handsome man.
man.
Well, I guess that, that's going to shape some of the direction that my crew might go in, because Zoro's kind of an all-rounder. I think most people think Zoro's kind of hot. He's got the body, he's got the strength, he's got the reliability. He's kind of dumb as rocks. But unless you're interested in smart men, you're going to like Zoro. So, I'm going to take my crew. I think this might be taking my harem in a certain direction, a little bit of a
Okay.
bad boy direction,
Oh, okay.
while also filling in some of the holes that were left with my first pick.
Okay.
And that means that this pick is going to be the man I forgot in the last draft,
No.
Trafalgar D. Law.
Okay.
Tattoos on the fingers. He's a
Yeah.
smart guy, kind of annoying, has kind of like that punk aesthetic.
Yeah, I don't think he wasn't really on my list for my harem, but you know, if you, I see the theme. I see the theme, and I can mess with it.
I gotta say that I have an idea of there's still a possibility to make my crew a little bit more of an all-rounder, but I think that theme going right now is it's kind of fun. I kind of like it. There's a certain type for it. If I got Eliza, who dressed up as Eustace Kidd for my birthday as a judge, like, you would see a, I think you'd be seeing a, I, well, I actually know, because I know the fanfic she reads, and she sent me some to translate, that she would really be loving my crew.
Yeah.
But for the third pick, I was thinking between a few different characters. I
Okay.
think I'm gonna go with Portgas the Ace, a man with
That
no
was,
shirt on, the muscles. He kind of has a bit of a carefree attitude, but he
That's
can
a
be serious. You see
great
when he
pick.
starts tweaking, you're not so sure he's not gonna lose it. When he tweaks, he's about to tweak. He's
Maybe
about to
young
like.
ace. Maybe young ace.
I'm just saying, he was tweaking. He
Old
was
ace
tweaking at
mellowed out a
Marine.
little bit.
He was tweaking at Marineford. That's what he got a hole in his chest. He could have just got on the ship. He was tweaking when he said he's going after Blackbeard. But we know he's a loving older brother. Women like a loving older brother. But he's got a little bit of an edge to him. We're not playing it safe. We're not going with guys who are nice, and we're not going to this point anyway with guys who are nice and just have no edge to him. We want someone with a little bit of that sexy edge. So
Yeah, I
that's the
got you.
ace pick.
I got you. Yeah. Well, my that was actually probably going to be my pick if you hadn't taken Ace. I think Ace is a great pick, but I had a backup plan, and my backup plan is actually going to be Senor Pink.
Bro, I literally was about to say, I dare you to take senior pick. I was like 2 seconds from being like, I dare you to take senior pick. I
Yeah,
swear to
I'm
God.
taking Senor Pink is going to be on my hero.
I was like, he's not gonna say that as the third pick. That's ridiculous.
No, that's my third pick, Senor Pink. He's gonna be. He's a loving man. Also, he's got another non-traditional. See, here you have like you're trying to build a bad boy theme. I've got a different like type of man, body structure, all the age range for all of the women who want to come to my hair. If you're into older
Nah,
men,
bro, you
I've
got.
got I've
If
got
you're into older
really.
men, you got a crew. You got an older man crew.
No. Listen. If you want an older man, you got Renly. If you want a more traditionally handsome man, you got Ben Beckman. If you want someone who's more, got more of a dad bod, who's, gonna love you really, really passionate, love you in death, you've got Senior Pink.
Bro,
So I've
60% of
got
your crew
I've
got
got
gray hair. 60% of
huh?
your crew got gray hair.
No, a gray hair. Ben Beckman doesn't have gray hair, does he?
Ben Beckman has gray hair,
That's true. I was looking at a picture of Ben Beckman from Luffy's childhood, but it's okay. Doesn't matter. Ben Beckman's still a handsome man.
I guarantee you that if we showed anyone these two crews and said who made which, everyone would be like, the one with all the older characters is the one Jordan made.
Yeah,
I guarantee
probably.
you.
Yeah. No, I like it. I like my crew. I'm going with those three for now.
Is pretty fun. I like the direction that we're going in. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun as we get to the I think the judging round next week, and then as we come back to kind of see what we can fill the holes, whether the ladies think that we should double down on our themes or become a little bit more well-rounded. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. But all I know for sure is that if you want to call someone daddy, Abraham's crew is for you.
100%. 100%. Doors are
let's
wide open.
let's get into the culture, because I know we're talking about love in the harem, and we got a couple different things talking about love in terms of the culture segment. So Alex, you want to tell us about Katie and her new book?
Yeah, she reads a lot of fiction. I think a lot of oh man, I'm already forgetting the word. It's romance fantasy, but
Smut.
it's romanticy. Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's a whole ecosystem of these new
Okay.
books, but the most recent book she's reading is a bit more down to earth. It's called Funny Story, and the premise is a woman and her fiance are preparing for their wedding when he goes on his bachelor trip. And on the trip, his female best friend confesses her love for him, causing him to break off the engagement and run away with her to Italy. So this is, fiction, obviously, but I think raises a couple questions. I think you're both are well positioned to answer. The first one is this woman crazy for dating a man with a female best friend? And the second is, can two people be not just friends, but best friends if they are both romantically interested in people of the same gender as the other person?
You want to go first, Jordan, or you want me to go first?
I mean, I would say obviously. I think it's completely
Okay.
reasonable. I mean, first of all, it's like I'm willing to bet there's a million gay men who have other gay men best friends, lesbian women who have lesbian women best friends.
What about bisexual people? Can bisexual people
Yeah, they're not even allowed to have best friends. You can't have best
have
friends because you're
friends?
both attracted to each other. So it's like completely. So to me, it seems unreasonable. Now, that's not to say that when it comes, like, I have someone who I'd consider like in my circle of best friends who's a woman, right? Like, and she's single and I'm single, and like, nothing's ever happened between us. I think certainly it's a risk that people might try that, but I also kind of understand that the things that we look at for someone that we're interested in, especially as we get older and more mature, are different than the things that we might look at for someone that we actually want to like date and be with and fall in love with or whatever. And it's like, we could have different levels of communication that we want, and that's just never going to work. Like, we could both, one wants kids, one doesn't want kids, and you understand this is the best place to be. But to me, I think it's definitely possible. And so much of what makes it difficult is the way we're raised to think about people and think about women in particular. If you're in the, heterosexual, like, relationship, like, I think we're raised to think about women in this always romantic way, but I don't think it's like necessary. What do you think, Abraham?
So to answer your first question, no, I don't think she was crazy for dating a man with a female best friend. And I don't think, I mean, I agree with you like that. You can be best friends with someone of the opposite sex. I have a lot of close friends that are women. I wouldn't say any of my best friends are women. But I have people that I have confided very, very personal stuff with, very, very intimate details that about my own life that I don't share with a lot of other people. And that I at this point in my life do not think of as anything outside of like a platonic friendship, right? But to play devil's advocate, I'm gonna take this in a slightly different direction than maybe Alex originally posed it. I do
Uh-oh.
understand. No, I do get it when I do get why people can be insecure about having a partner whose best friend is of the opposite sex, or I guess it doesn't have to be the op you know the that who they could potentially be like romantically involved with, right? Because
Right.
you're like, if this is someone you have that deep emotional connection with, and then if you have this deep emotional connection with someone, what's to say that that emotional bond that you has doesn't develop into something else? Also, there are men out there. Like our friend Casey at our latest D&D session said she had a friend who was getting married, and then one of her male best friend basically confessed to her in real life and was like, "Oh, I love you." And she was like, "Well, I'm still getting married, so no, I'm sorry, but I still want to be friends because we're so close." And apparently this guy was not interested in being friends. It was like a
Right.
long con kind of game that he was playing.
Yeah. Dang, like you can't wait that long, boy.
He was really playing the long. And I mean, there are trash men out there like that, right? There's also trash women out there like that too.
Oh, yeah.
But so I get why people can be insecure about that. I get why, but like honestly, at the end of the day, you just have to trust the partner that you're with, right? You got to trust that they
Right.
wouldn't betray you like that. And if you don't have that foundation in your relationship, then the relationship's probably not going to last anyways.
Right. Well, and also really quickly too, my teammate Julius, who I mentioned, he found out that his mom actually did break off another engagement because his dad did that exact thing, but she broke it off for him, and that's how they're married. So when you tell that story, I'm like,
You see,
sometimes it
so
works. I'm like, sometimes
that's
it
what I'm
works.
saying. The feeling is not unjustified, but to say
Right.
that, oh, men and women can't be best friends, I feel like is taking that to the extreme.
Yeah, I agree. And I think your entire point about insecurity and like being secure in your relationship and what the foundation you have is really the most important part. For me, obviously, as someone who's like interested in practicing some form of non-monogamy and being in open relationships, people always say, are you going to be like okay with her being with someone else? And I'm like, whoever she chooses for a side chick does not necessarily like that's not going to make them a threat to me. Like whatever, like the connection I have with someone is going to be about the relationship that we have and about exactly how deep that is. And like if it's someone, right, as you know, I'm like selective with who I decide to like date and like make a girlfriend, whatever, right? Like I'm very slow to do that. And I'm like next segment coming up, which now I wouldn't say I have a good, but it's very interesting. It's gonna get wild. But I say that as like the guy just flew back to Chicago. But for me, it's understanding that like I'm gonna feel if I'm with someone that like not anyone could just build whatever connection we have. Like I'm choosing to be with someone because whatever connection we had feels like special and feels like it would be difficult to just like create from someone else that they just might want to sleep with. Like there's a lot of people I want to sleep with that they're not all people that I want to like be in a deep and long-term relationship with. And so for me, like having it all comes down to, are you insecure? And it's like, if you're insecure in your partner having like other friends who are of other genders, but even if they're very close, if you're insecure about that, then you don't really, that's really about you and your belief and your connection. And like you said, is that foundation that you just talked about there?
Alex, we got anything else to talk about today?
Just some boring stuff about Jordan.
We could
No,
probably
I'm
skip
kidding.
I definitely just teased it, so
No, I know. Yeah, we were talking last week about how you were running off to Chicago in your best sweatpants to go to this wedding of a woman you had basically just met. as far as I understand it.
In real life, we had met online through work and well before.
Gotcha. So how was being the plus one to her cousin's wedding? What happened?
Dude, it was kind of crazy. And first of all, really quickly, I wore jeans for the rehearsal dinner. I want to be really clear. I wore jeans and a button down shirt. It was not like a long sleeve shirt. It's like a button down, like
did you
almost
get
like
any looks?
Not everyone was like, oh, like it was mostly just like, you know, like, oh, who's this guy, you know? I think it was like, it was so, but the thing is the family's so huge. Like I met everyone, first of all, and it was insane. Like she has a massive family and it's like, not all of the cousins even know who she is. So you're really just showing up and starting to meet people who don't actually even all know each other. And they're just like, oh, who are, and I'm like, I'm with Rebecca, you know? And they're like, okay, cool. You know, or like some, oh, we haven't talked in a few years, you know? And so like, I'm just part of the husbands and boyfriends club, like hanging out with all the other guys and husbands and boyfriends. And like, honestly, it was really fun, but it was so good, dude. It was like, it was actually like completely bananas. Like,
in what way?
Like, I feel like, well, one, it's just like this, I think it feels like it like kind of accelerates things when you literally are meeting someone's entire family, right? Like I'm hanging out with her mom. We're all driving out. I spent like hours with her mom as we like drive around at the wedding, whatever. I met her brother. Like I'm experiencing her doing the kind of like getting frustrated with her family in the way that we all do with our like forever families and our home families. And I think like, and of course, just like things like, you know, you're going to a wedding, you're dancing, like you're being together the whole time, played karaoke, get to meet her cool cousin, Mark, who was the one who we added to the Discord server, who's the only one who knows that I was like a week, that I like met her a week ago. Everyone else, he's kind of like dodged the question of like, oh, but so Rebecca lives in Japan and you live in Providence. Do you go to Japan a lot? I'm like, yeah, I go like every year, which is actually yeah, I'm going for a month in October, like actually true, but we're just going to kind of like gloss around the details so I don't have to tell anyone that I met her a week ago and that's why I'm here. And the bride knew obviously too, because she asked if I could come, but like it felt like we were like it kind of felt like we were like making love, like whenever we were like together at night, it was like, it was bananas. And like
when you guys were together at night, you said?
Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, you know, yeah. it genuinely felt like really deep and really like sweet and meaningful. And there's a lot of like, you know,
did
talking
she the
about
one?
How, huh? Man, you know, I'm on that the one stuff, whatever, man. But she also like into like not open to non-monogamous relationships, open to like the idea of like not living with a partner, like not necessarily wanting to get married, things like that. It's like
you guys talked about all this in within the first week,
shoot, man. Like I don't know, like we had a long time ago. We had 3 days, and it like genuinely felt like so good and deep, and like I genuinely feel like I have very deep feelings for her, and I'm like, dang, like, Japan's going to be crazy when I go there. She's like, yeah, like, I'll come hang out. I'm like, I'm going to be there for a whole month. So we'll know something when I go to Japan and get back from that.
When are you going? You
know, we were like, it's insane to be like, we're dating because she lives in Japan. But it also kind of feels like I have a long distance girlfriend right now, which is weird.
Yeah. When are you going to Japan?
Basically all of October, which was already planned, you know, from the beginning.
Yeah. Wow. That's I mean, I'm happy for you.
Yeah, like you
run fast and you also move through these relationships quickly, because I feel like you're speed running this relationship. You went to the wedding 1 week, you're already talking about, oh, do you want to get married or not? Do you want to have a monogamous relationship or not? Like, these are all conversations that I've never had within a week of dating someone personally.
But have you ever like met someone's entire family, like literally 200 people in their family?
Yeah, I've never done that either. That's like, what I'm saying. You're speed running this relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It accelerates things, right? Like it just because already it felt like we had a really good connection in the first few days, and I decided to go back, right? And then it's like you go back, you're it's like, you probably wouldn't have spent literally 3 full days with someone within a week of knowing, and like 24 hours, maybe like 22 of the 24 hours were together, right? And
Yeah.
so, dang, I'm like, who would you have thought this for me coming on the podcast? You know how talking about all my different love life, is this what you would have expected?
No, definitely. I mean, wouldn't that's not what I would have expected from you or from anyone, to be honest. This is a unique situation that you found yourself in. I hope you it works out. I genuinely do.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, and I hope so. I hope so too, man. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens over these next couple months with Japan. It'll be interesting to figure out what happens over the course of the next year and a half, because she'll move somewhere when she finishes her PhD in a year and a half, and
What's she doing her PhD in?
sculpture.
Didn't know people did that. PhDs
Yeah,
in that.
yeah.
Okay.
No, it's very blue period, but honestly, she's very cool. Like, does PhD in sculpture, like sings in a punk band, loves karaoke also, which we like. She was getting the whole fam to do karaoke, and I was like, dang, like this, like I feel like I really feel this spiritually right now.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
So
Okay. Good for you, man. I hope it works out.
appreciate it, boss. Obviously, there will be updates in October, so can't
Yeah.
wait. But that's
All
all we
right.
got for this week. Now that you just have me sitting here smiling, talking about my love life, we're gonna give a big thanks to Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. Come back next Sunday to hear what we've got to say about chapter 1121. No more updates on my love life that week. It'll be a little while until we have more major ones. So sorry for those of you who are on the edge of your seat with that. In the meantime, we are your friends. Read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking, rating, reviewing us wherever you get your podcasts. On YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece, and on Twitter at FWROP Pod. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Peace. Oh.